So for those who know, this is Intro to Anarchism, and I'm Cindy Milstein. Ariel was supposed to present with me, and she's sick. So it's not going to be a panel, it's going to be me, and then we can have a discussion. So you can leave if you want, if you heard me speak before, if we don't. Or I was thinking maybe if people want to move you close to me, or a circle, or I can. If you don't have to, but if you want to, move closer. Kind of a big room. Maybe I'll just get going because it's a short time, and maybe I'll stand up because I'm talking. I'm a nervous talker, fast talker, and I'll slow down a little if I stand up. Okay, so this goes for about an hour, and some of you in the room are maybe anarchists and have your ideas about what anarchism is about, and that would be great if people after I'm done want to share what they understand anarchism to be, because this is obviously one person's view, which is why it would have been nice to have Ariel, because she and I have pretty divergent views on certain things, which is actually great, and we both live our lives really similarly, which is what's intriguing to me about anarchists. Many of us live very similar ethical sort of orientations toward our lives, but then have different sort of takes on how you understand anarchism, which is something I love about anarchism, and I will talk about today. I live in Vermont, and I'm part of a small volunteer bookstore called Black Sheep. They're tabling upstairs if you want to come chat afterwards. Or if you're in Vermont and want to move for space, one of numerous great, just a whole renaissance of anarchist bookstores and info shops all over the country and world, which is great. And I'm also part of something called the Institute for Anarchist Studies, which is not a physical institute. It's people who want to encourage anarchists to be as serious about doing sort of theoretical and intellectual work. Not because we want to commodify it and sell ideas back, et cetera, but because theory and practice have to go together, and anarchists have been great at practice and less good at actually like doing the sort of social theory, strategizing. So the Institute for Anarchist Studies gives away money. We ask anarchists to give us money, so you're welcome to give me money, and then we redistribute it back to other anarchists all around the world and other radicals that do writing and translation projects. So if you write and are looking for money, we also help you with editing. We have a journal if you want to take a writing out, et cetera. We do an anarchist theory conference. And that's why I kind of do public talking. I want to encourage everybody to write and think about doing public talking, because that's part of a lovely tradition in anarchism, which is kind of education work for each other. And that's why we do the Institute for Anarchist Studies too. And I also write a lot, and I do public speaking as part of my political work. And I like when people, I get to read other people's stuff and get to hear them speak too. Because that's how education, I think, should happen. That and study groups and things. So I don't know what they titled this talk, but I often, when I do this, call it kind of anarchism and its aspirations, because I really like the idea of anarchism being sort of a placeholder for a set of values and ethics and aspirations for what we want the world to be, and I think that's actually the strongest part of anarchism is an ethical orientation that then gets attempted to be practiced, which I'll get to in a minute. I kind of want to start off with sort of a really quick, like, what is anarchism as something that is a political philosophy and that people understood and emerged as a specific word that was meant to be a political philosophy. I'm really interested in political philosophy. Todd May, many of you may know, is a post-structuralist anarchist, wrote a book called Post-Structuralist Anarchism, and what's the title? Okay, I'll put it on, we can come do this. But Todd teaches philosophy, and he once said the reason to do political philosophy is because philosophy is about all of us thinking about the world, and we can all do that. And political part of it is about the question of power. So we're basically thinking about power. That's why political philosophy is important. And anarchism is probably, for me, one of the most wonderful political philosophies that is precisely interested in the question of power. I would say actually redistributing it to all of us, that different anarchists might have a different take on that. But it emerged in the 1840s. In 1860s, 1880s in Europe, but it also emerged all around the world because even then, anarchists liked to travel, and people from China traveled to Europe and met anarchists in Europe and went back to China and started the whole Chinese anarchism, which is really distinct from European anarchism and Latin America, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So despite the fact that it is something that people perceive as emerging from Europe, there was so much influence and interplay and traveling around and ideas being brought to other parts of the world and changing when people get to other parts of the world. So, but it was a distinct word that was given a name by Proudhon, who's a very well-known anarchist, in 1840. He wrote a piece called What is Property? Answer, property is that. He did not mean a toothbrush. He meant means of production. Housing, you know, is distinguishing between possessions, large-scale property that people hold power over. And he said, anarchism is, as man seeks justice in equality, so society seeks order in anarchy. Which I don't like the word anarchy. I like the word anarchism, but came up with a philosophy. And he understood this as the absence sort of a master. But I like thinking about the circle A as the idea that an O around the A is that it's actually calling for a different form of order, a different form of social organization, is how I understand anarchism. Which is why I don't know if that's what circle A means, but the circle A where the A does not break outside the O, we understand the O to be a different form of social organization. And it comes from an ancient Greek word which can translate a variety of ways, but really meaning the absence of sort of something above us, coercion, rulers. I don't actually like the word government because I think I actually am an anarchist in favor of self-government. It's not about something above us, it's something we do together. There's a guy named Martin Buber who wrote a book called Paths in Utopia, which I highly, highly recommend. Almost nobody reads it, and Martin Buber's a lovely, lovely book. And he actually came up with a word called anocracy, which someday I'm going to start calling myself anachronism. I don't know if it doesn't work as well, but it means absence of domination, which I actually think is the best definition of the negative side of anarchism. That we're seeking a world, political philosophy of anarchism from its start, was seeking a world that was, we would try to continually rid the world of domination, except consensual domination, I would actually add. You know, you want to have forms of domination in your sexuality, et cetera, and that's consensual. I know that's kind of, but I actually think it's important that domination per se may be okay in small instances if it's something we do, so that non-consensual forms of domination over other people. But no one from the very beginning understood anarchism as simply a negative philosophy, the absence of something. And another, I actually really dislike Proudhon. He's called the father of anarchism, and if you read his work, he's completely a misogynistic, patriarchal, and very anti-Semitic, actually kind of a sort of petty, small-scale capitalist, if you get his economic guide. I don't like Proudhon so much, but he did come up with the word. Another anarchist who I like in terms of his writing a lot, not necessarily all his activities, but some of his writings, Errico Malatesta. If anyone translates from Italian to English, a lot of his work needs to be translated into not only English, but other languages. And he said this about anarchism, that it is a form of social life in which men live as brothers, where nobody is in a position to oppress or exploit anyone else, and in which all the means to achieve our maximum moral and material development are available to everyone. And obviously the gendered language of both of them is, you know, something people wouldn't use, hopefully, today. But I really like the idea where we all live together in solidarity with each other as human beings, and I've been reading Judith Butler lately, and she talks a lot about expanding the category of human beings, because we assume what we mean by human, but many people are actually not included in that category. So expanding the notion of human, including all of us in that, in solidarity, where no one can oppress or hurt anyone else, and where we all are able to not only get our material needs met, but our who we are as people. That's really important, because it's not simply getting bread on the table, it's also getting things that are just as essential. I was arguing bread. Books are just as essential as bread, or Judith Butler, again, so I'm reading her, really enjoying reading Judith Butler, who's a statist, but a great career theorist, and she actually followed her idea, she's being an anarchist. She talks a lot, she has this lovely quote, she says, possibility is not a luxury, it is as crucial as bread, and I love that quote. I love that quote, I'm quoting it all the time, I'm reading the book, but I love that quote. That the sense of what we understand the world to be is it bread, art, love, beauty, housing, healthcare, they're all what we all need, and that's what's lovely about this quote from Malthus. Okay, so from its very beginning in the 19th century, anarchism not only held out this idea that we don't want a world filled with domination, but anarchists, more than any other political philosophy, I think, really tried to fill in what a really expansive notion of aspirations or a qualitative ethical framework that would say, so what do we want in the place of domination? What do we want in the place of this? And the short answer from a lot of anarchists was things like no gods, no masters, because when anarchism emerged, it actually emerged in tension with the rise of capitalism and the rise of nation states, and also churches, which had a lot of power, so they were really concerned about, you know, bosses, politicians, and you know, priests. But I really love this phrase that anarchists have always come up with, a free society of free individuals. Free society of free individuals, where neither side of that is right without the other. And in really shorthand, the way I understand liberalism is free individuals. And the way I understand communism, to flatten it out, is a free society. And we could question the word free in both those cases, but really that is the aim of liberalism as a political philosophy, is that an individual can live an unfettered life, you know, protected by the state or other things. And communism at its sort of best was also the idea that we have this very egalitarian collectivist society, and society would be what we focus on. And Ant, what's lovely about Ant is it said, you know, neither works without the other. My freedom is going to instantly impinge upon your freedom, and so part of it is us figuring out together how I can fully be who I want to be in the world, but we can all fully be who we want to be in the world, and we can also create something that's larger than all of us, what's called society or communities or, you know, neighborhoods, projects, etc. That both have to happen. But what's interesting about anarchism, and this is what I totally love about it, is that it actually is completely transparent about it. If we were always looking at every phenomena and saying, that might have some elements of domination that I don't like, but it might have some elements of freedom, and how can I expand both? And do that in a way that's clear and transparent, and fight it out, argue it out in our collectives and our projects, that anarchism is actually about continually trying to work through in a process that's transparent, humane, you know, as honest as possible, the fact that there's always going to be a tension between my freedom and the social freedom, or the local and the global, or the, you know, the particular and the universal, or any of these kind of binary oppositions that get made, that most political philosophies try to make it look like as if you can make a neat picture of the world if you just simply concentrate on the collective, and suddenly everything will be wonderful, just the individual. And anarchism says, while we need to do both, it's the actual process of trying to do that, and it's never going to be, never going to reach this perfect little balance where Cindy feels fully who she is, an individuated, wonderful, and she's living in a fully wonderful, individuated community where everyone else is individuated. It's going to be a constant struggle, and the struggle itself is exactly where anarchism takes place. When it's open for discussion and dialogue and revisiting, and we question ourselves publicly, that we too are just as open to the criticisms of ourselves as trying to rid ourselves of forms of coercion and domination. And we do that publicly with each other. And I think anarchism at its best does that in its practice. Those of you that are involved in collective projects, bookstores, food projects, healthcare, gardens, etc., that's probably what's so lovely about it, where you really begin to see yourself as a silly place you have with your collective, where everyone's mad at each other and you have some tip, and you actually sit down and work it out, and you can, and actually, it doesn't always work out, and, you know, that's, we're not good at it all the time, but sometimes there's this moment where I've been involved in so many collectives where the actual process of us figuring out that balance is where we really feel seen by each other and heard and where we actually make a different society, even if this is our bookstore or our community garden. It's our form of practice that anarchists are good at doing that. Okay, so anarchism emerges in the late 19th century. It really emerges at a time with a host of revolutions and a host of innovations, socialism, communism. So it's a very, very revolutionary time period. Very innovative at that time period, but I'm going to skip to the present because it's a short time, not go through the kind of beginnings of classical anarchism unless people want to come back to that, but I would encourage you, if you're really interested in a nice little overview book of anarchism, there's not so many great little pithy overview books of anarchism, but one is just simply called Anarchism by Daniel Garan, who often identifies as sort of more of a libertarian socialist. He's not alive anymore. And it's a nice little introduction. He leaves out one kind of anarchism, which is Kropotkin. Some of you may have heard of him before, who was an anarcho-communist. But he tends to cover sort of all the different tendencies, the different values in a few moments. It's a dated book, but it's a nice little introduction, sort of a classical sort of view of anarchism.
Can you see it?
It's Daniel, G-U-R-E-I-N. And who speaks French? I'm sure I totally pronounced his name poorly. It's quite long. Well. It's a cheap book too. It's like $10. There's a lot of other books that are really thick. There's something called The Man in the Impossible that's like this. It's an incredible book. It goes through all the classical anarchists. It will take you, you know, a year to read. If you're really excited, read that book. There's something also called The Documentary History of Anarchism, which is just coming out, and it's really expensive. $35, I think. It's going to be in two volumes. But it also covers, instead of going through people, it goes through sort of, okay, anarchism and feminism, anarchism and stuff. It has sort of groups of people writing, and it has a lot of sort of unknown anarchists, versus Garan's book is kind of looking at the classical anarchists. One thing I should mention before moving to the present, or outside of the historical moment of anarchism's emergence, when people look back at that time period, it's called classical anarchism. There's very well-known people, you know, if you've heard of anyone, you've probably heard of Emma Goldman, who actually supposedly never said, if I can't Dan said, I don't want to be part of this revolution. I think she actually never said that. It's someone to find out where she said, actually, I've heard a lot of times that she never really even said that, but it's a nice quote, everyone knows it. So she's really well known, Peter Kropotkin, Mikhail Bakunin, who else, names of other famous, there's four other famous anarchists one might have heard of. Rudolf Rocker, Malatesta, I named. But there's sort of these big figures. If you look back on every introduction to anarchists, we'll have these people. And it's a shame because there was thousands and thousands and millions of anarchists around the world, and a lot of people are doing good histories right now to uncover the fact. As I mentioned, for instance, there was a huge Chinese anarchist movement, huge amount of Chinese anarchists. Tons, hundreds of anarchist periodicals that were going on in China before Mao. And many of those anarchists became communists because they got excited about the Bolshevik Revolution. And there's a great writer named Arif Derlik, if you're related to Chinese anarchism, for instance. That's one of the things he's written about as a Marxist, but he's been really very lovely writing about, very fair and honest writing about China, both the Marxism and anarchism. And he talked about how the anarchists, you wouldn't have had a cultural revolution under Mao unless there had been anarchists ahead of that, because anarchists are really concerned about all of life, culture. And his argument is that's why there's the cultural part in the revolution. People were anarchists before they were communists in China. So really interesting things are being uncovered. History of anarchism in New York is just tremendous. It goes back, dozens and dozens of decades, centuries. So if you really get excited about this, plenty to read about localized history of anarchism. And I would encourage you, if you get really excited, not just to concentrate on the big name people. Their work is often very dated. Before I move on to contemporary anarchism, they, again, were really concerned with capitalism, which at that time was suddenly emerging and large in people's lives and seemed new and fresh and awful and potentially stoppable, whereas now it seems like it's sort of ubiquitous and natural, which is what's hard about fighting it now. And Marx was writing, and they're all fighting friends and hating each other and splitting in groups and etc. But there was a real sense of like this was something fresh to contest, and it really was dramatically changing the world. All anarchists at that time were socialists that came out of sort of the milieu of really being they all understood themselves as wanting to change society, and they had splits over the question of, is it just capital, or is it a state? And anarchists said, well, we might get rid of capital, but we'd still have a state, or we'd still have the church. People like Emma Goldman and others also said, well, what about gender, or the arts? But very few people at that time period said, what about the natural world? What about, other forms of sexuality? There were some queer anarchists, but very few. That at least wrote about it. There probably were lots of queer anarchists, but in terms of it being one of these forms of domination, heteronormativity wasn't something anarchists in the classical period were by and large thinking about. So the problem with going back to classical anarchism, which is to simply take it and become a classical anarchist now, is it misses so much of both what's happening now that's different in 1840, 1880, 1920, and it misses whole categories that are forms of domination. Which again is why I like this idea of anarchism being constantly trying to root out forms of domination, because there'll be new ones that will emerge all the time. Like the anti-capitalist movement that came in the 1990s to North America, to the United States with Seattle. Other people have been doing work for a lot longer around the world and in the United States. But people were really trying to get it that there's something happening in capitalism that's different right now and in the state. And so if you go back to the classical anarchists, they'll still be talking about, guild forms of economics or things like that, which don't necessarily, or factory forms, which less and less are meaningful to people's lives for working in Walmart, for instance. Okay. So, when anarchism first emerged, though, as a classical theory, anarchists instantly started distinguishing the differences among them. So, I'm not going to go through this, but you have this idea where anarchists almost always add adjectives to what they do. So, I'm an anarcho-communist. To out myself. I've come to the tradition, not necessarily for Kropotkin, but I was friends with and knew Murray Bookchin for a long time, and a contemporary anarchist, so I'd really encourage people to read. But the idea with anarcho-communism is that you are concerned about the anarcho part, about making society self-governing, self-managed, self-organized, but you're really also the simultaneously sense of like the economic realm, really drawing a lot more from Marx and maybe some other traditions in anarchism. But there are many, there's anarcho-feminism, anarcho-syndicalism, anarcho-insurrectionaryism, collectivism. And some would say the problem with anarchists is they can't agree on anything, so they have to split off and have thousands of factions. And today there's even more. There's probably 500 different adjectives and ways of modifying anarchism. But that, again, is what I think is beautiful about anarchism. Instead of pretending that we're all the same and we all have to agree on everything, we share a set of values, but then I say, but I'm actually really profoundly interested in myself, not just as a value that we might all share, but I'm also really interested in the ecological issue. So I'm going to become an ecological anarchist. And I'm going to name myself that and tell you that. And that transparency is precisely what's going to make anarchism richer and the conversation more interesting. So people of color anarchists or transgender anarchists or, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That isn't because we can't get along with each other. It's precisely because anarchism is asking, what would it look like to have unity and diversity? And make it clear. Unlike the Marxist or authoritarian left, which comes up with non-meaningful descriptions, often in the name of front groups that don't even describe that they're even socialists, to actually hide the differences among them, or actually even hide their politics. Anarchists are fine. I'm fine telling you I'm totally different than that anarchist over there. And it's precisely there we can meet and talk and have wonderful conversations, and we can become different. Both of us can become different and expansive about where we see anarchism. So the classical time period of anarchism sort of ends, sadly, with various red theories in the United States. Tons of anarchists were deported and killed and persecuted, especially in the United States. Emma Goldman was sent away, a bunch of other anarchists, especially from New York around the 20s and 30s, the Spanish Civil War, the Spanish Revolution. One of the largest examples people point to is, was there ever a successful anarchist society? If you're interested in one, the eminent example is Spain in the 1930s, huge amounts of, you know, collectivist projects taking over land, communities, self-managed militias, self-managed communities, self-managed ways of producing things, factories, etc. But I actually, at the end, want to argue that that's maybe not what our goal is, to have an anarchist society. I'll bring that in at the end. But that's an example people point to whenever they're like, this never works. And sadly, it worked for a while, and then both communists and fascists and the anarchists themselves to some degree, it all imploded. Many anarchists were killed in prisons, again, exiled, and anarchism seemed to disappear. There were still anarchists, but it was a really hard time. A lot of anarchists couldn't find each other. Literature wasn't available. It was a real kind of down for the left in general, too. The Communist Party in Eastern Europe and the USSR was really discrediting any idea of socialism as an ideal when Stalinism, etc., was really this idea that we could actually transform the world. And capitalism became stronger and stronger. And as we all know, in 1989, when the wall fell in the East, suddenly capitalism had won. And that was the dominant, suddenly we're not even in a bipolar world. Communism versus capitalism. We're in the capitalist, neoliberalist world that has been victorious. And there was so little space left. And what's interesting is, in the past 10 or 15 years, anarchism has seemed to come out again. And many of us who were anarchists, or many people who have been anarchists a lot longer than I have, suddenly were so happy, I think, to see a bunch of people being able to be exposed to anarchism, and that's what I want to describe during the last little half. This is what sort of the values are that reemerge with anarchism, that come out again more generally. But it's a lovely thing to be able to actually be visible with anarchism again. And it's great, this book fair is only 2 years old, and I love the fact in the last 10 years there's suddenly tons more book fairs and conferences and places for people, because, I didn't become an anarchist for way longer than I would have. I already understood myself that way, but I didn't know there was a tradition. There were people who'd done this before. There were other people I could work with. And it was like, wow, if only I had read a book 10 years before. And it's so nice that when you're like 12 years old now, 6 or 8, you can actually, doesn't mean you're going to become an anarchist, but we're just as legitimate to be out and about, it's a legitimate political philosophy and practice. It actually wants to be subversive and just change the fundamental order, but if unless it's visible, people have no way to come to it, so that's a really nice thing about its reemergence. So it started reemerging in the 60s. There were a lot of actually anarchists in the 60s, which, again, histories are being written about to explain that some things we didn't even understand were anarchists actually were in the 60s. Anarchists are drawing from some of the more libertarian forms of Marxism from the 60s, and we have this real flowering again of a contemporary anarchism that's much better, stronger, diverse, and nuanced, I think, than classical anarchism. So classical anarchism was very, I'm going to end this with a section of what I understand the values are that all anarchists share, but classical anarchism, for all its loveliness and emergence, was also pretty naive in a lot of ways. Kropotkin had this one thing where when we have the better society, we'll all meet once a year in our communities to hammer out the slight little differences that have come up over the whole year. And if any of you even lived in it, like even with one other person, if you've ever lived with one other person, probably one meeting for a half hour a year to resolve the minor differences that come up probably would be far, far too little to come up, all the things that come up. And that's okay that we, as humans, have conflict and differences and disagreements.
The thing that's interesting about contemporary anarchism is people are starting to grapple more and more with, well, we do need to figure out what happens when people are bad to each other, whether it's they don't wash the dishes or they rape someone, or, you know, and those things are probably going to happen throughout the, potentially are going to happen even in a better and better society. So what are the ways we would deal with that that aren't about prisons? What are the ways we deal with actually having open decision-making and ways of doing this more and more humane? How would we more and more bring people into what we understand as the human and recognize the differences among us? So again, there's all sorts of new kinds of anarchism emerging. It's like anarchism might never have thought of a whole bunch of issues. Is this building accessible, et cetera, et cetera? They might not have thought about those things in the 19th century. And contemporary anarchists are much more conscientious, I think, about thinking about the multiplicity of who we are and what we bring to our hands. Okay. So the last thing I want to talk about and open it up is, while there's so many types of anarchists, I really think there's some things that anarchists, I find, no matter how divergent, there's tendencies in anarchism I despise, I hate, we can talk about this later, I hate the sort of anti-civilization, the primitivist tendencies in anarchism. There's other forms of anarchism, people wouldn't like my forms of anarchism. You know, so there's lots of different tendencies within anarchism that do really actually maybe even be irreconcilable, but has a lot. But on the other hand, when I hang out with people who are against civilization and say they're an anarchist, I still feel profound recognition that we live our lives really similarly, which is always really interesting to me. I don't want society to go away, and some anarchists do, but we both tend to live our lives really, really similarly. So that's why I think there's something that both unifies us and allows for this divergence of understanding about how we would transform the world. And all anarchists want to transform the world. They want a world without forms of domination. They want widespread fundamental social transformation. I would actually argue you're not an anarchist if you don't want that. I don't like to say you are not an anarchist, because I think who gets to decide that. But if you think you can just slightly fix this present world we live in, I think that's where anarchism sort of ends, that it's fundamentally a revolutionary political philosophy. I really want to emphasize, like, revolution, the idea that we're looking for fundamental ways of looking at living our daily lives and the institutions. Okay, so here are the things I think all anarchists would share. And the first one was this idea of revolution. That all anarchists are anti-capitalist and anti-statist. Those are the two big things you always know about anarchists. There are anarchists that are anti-capitalist and pro-statist, but I wouldn't call those anarchist nationalists and things like that. There's anarchist fascists. There's people, anarchists that don't like the state but like capitalism. I actually would move them outside of the category of anarchism. They might be forms of libertarianism, but I wouldn't call those anarchists. So that's something all anarchists would still hold in common. And I think that's still right, even though there's all sorts of forms of domination that exist and all sorts of ways we can have a different society. The state and capital still loom pretty damn large in our lives. Capitalism is particular. Not only is it, I'm not really interested in it, capitalism as much as an economic system. I think what's best about Marx, and I would encourage all anarchists to read Marx, is that Marx understood what I like best about his work is not his economic understanding of capitalism, but his understanding is that capitalism shapes social relations. It shapes how we see each other. It shapes a set of values. It shapes, that becomes so ubiquitous that ways of looking at people in terms of what you can get for their exchange value, that everything becomes interchangeable in capitalism, the way Marx describes it. You can, you know, whether it's through money, whatever the equation, money equals commodity, someone who's a Marxist can do that better than me. But the idea that everything becomes equivalent and can be traded for something else, that we even start investing in that, and you look at you having a relationship with someone and it's not going well, and you're like, I don't know if I want to invest any more time in this. The sort of idea of, like, equivalency, or if you give someone something that you think you need to get the same amount back, that those are these little values that seep in from capitalism, the shape. So that's as, I think, almost ends. And capitalism makes us feel estranged from the world that we actually create. That's one of the brilliant things Marx ever came up with, I think. But not alone, obviously, it's took from Milieu and other people's ideas. But we create the wealth of the world, the products, the things, the relationships, and yet these things seem to keep us enslaved. But why? You know, so that's just really why I think capitalism is still fundamental in the state. Okay. But more interesting than that is, I think, contemporary anarchists all share a generalized critique of hierarchy. And domination, which I point to, but I think hierarchy in particular, that when there's things where other people have power above other people and can tell you what to do and imprison you and hurt you and not give you enough to live on simply because they have more of the share of power, social power, political power, economic power, that those forms of hierarchy need to be fundamentally abolished. We need to live in a non-hierarchical world. And that all anarchists share that. And that applies to the meaning that the whole life of something, which is the next thing I think all anarchists share,
is we don't just focus on the economic, the political, the social, the personal, the cultural, our body, host of isms. We look at the whole of life. So when you decide to become an anarchist, when you understand yourself as an anarchist, the one thing almost everybody will say that has happened to them when they become an anarchist is suddenly you reevaluate everything in your life. God, what are my clothes made out of? Is this what I want to dress like? Where do I get these? What do I eat? Where do I live? How do I make money? Do I need to make money? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That the whole of your life becomes transformed to try to come closer to approximating a set of values, which I'll get into in a minute. That you try to live, and no anarchist lives a lovely, perfect, ethical life. That isn't what I'm arguing. It's that you try to at least approximate your values as much as you can. And most anarchists live this really full, individuated life, and they often create our own subculture, so we even feel like we have communities that support those set of values. And what this is us practicing what it would be like if we could do that more and more and more. But we make a series of compromises constantly. We walk down streets that are funded by the federal government, we pay taxes, we, you know, wear our feet, etc., all sorts of things that have all sorts of social contradictions in them. You know, a lot of anarchists are like, oh, we shouldn't drive because that's bad, we should use bikes instead. I would imagine most bikes take a huge amount of industrial production, fossil fuels, hierarchical, you know, labor relations, et cetera, to produce. Bikes are not, like, somehow outside of capitalism, for instance, or outside of capitalism. But still, yeah, fine. Riding bikes appreciably better than driving in general. So, anarchists tend to say, how can we restructure the whole of life, not simply just the economic realm? So they don't just focus on let's making the working conditions better, let's make all of the whole life better. So anarchists also then really have this ethical orientation to what is the quality of life? What are the right questions to ask? What's the right thing to do? Unlike a lot of other political people, I think anarchists tend to be asked questions not is this pragmatic, is this efficient, you know, can we get this done, but is it the right thing to do? And that is to me the right question with everything we face. You may not be able to do things. I want to live in a directly democratic, confederated world without government, without capital. And every time I talk about that kind of thing, people are like, but how would that work on a global level? And I'm like, that to me is not the first question. The first question is, does everybody deserve to live in a world where they get to self-determine their lives with other people in their community? And we get to self-manage the whole world. That's the question for me. And how will we do that? Humans are pretty damn innovative. We're able to kill people on massive levels. We're able to do all sorts of things. We could probably figure out how to live better together. I'm pretty convinced of that. The pragmatic questions are less interesting. So, anarchists really do live this ethical orientation to life. And it could be argued that anarchism is really, that's what it is this idea that we are bringing ethic out into the world, making it transparent, practicing it, and hoping other people get it and want to do it themselves. Not because I tell you to do it, but because you realize you feel better doing it. And your community does, and your neighbors, and your families. My parents, who I adore, but also just seem to be really sad about how they live their lives. And at one point, my dad looked at me and goes, "It's like you live your life like you're retired. Just do what you want to do all the time. I never got the chance to do that." And it both is so poignant to me that on the one hand, I think not everyone can just simply do that. There's a host of social conditions that many, many people can't simply just live their life like they want to. So I'm not trying to minimize that. But there is this also psychological barrier where people think they can't also. So it's the combined project of us trying to create the material conditions so people can, but also that psychological leap where people think, but this is the only life I have, and it's the only life we all have together. If we don't actually do this now, when are we planning to do it? But this is the time, you know, as much as we can for each other. Not just me. I'm not trying to change the world for me. We're trying to do it for everybody so everyone can actually live their life to the fullest quality of what they want to see with others. That question, what is a successful anarchist society? I would actually argue I'm not really interested in creating an anarchist society or an anarchist world or an anarchist, you know, forms of self-governance. What I'm interested in is seeing things that happen all around the world constantly, continually, and hopefully more, that emulate a set of values. So the Zapatistas, who are an anarchist, who do a whole host of self-governance and really interesting ways of looking at domination, coming up with forms of freedom. People that exchange baby clothes, and people seem like they never buy baby clothes. When people have this incredible barter system with kids things, which is amazing to me, and it's sort of underground, and sort of, I don't have kids, and so I don't know, but it's like suddenly one of my sisters had kids, and suddenly she's like a box and box and stuff, and she's never ever bought anything for her kids, which is really, and she's not an anarchist at all. but this sense of mutualism that people exhibit. Or we could come up with libraries. I think they're a great example of I think everything should be like a library. Food, et cetera, housing, you know, check out, use it when you need it, goes back when you don't, whatever. There's just all these structures that emulate values, and if we had more and more of them, and we had less and less things like capitalism and the state,
that's more the society. I'm not so interested in saying, oh, that's not an anarchist thing. I don't care about what the self-attesters are doing. Or it has to be like, I want it to, because I'm an anarchist. So project for me isn't turning everybody into an anarchist. It's bringing out these values and hoping that other people see they're worthwhile. So anarchists, actually, the next thing I think all anarchists share is both this idea of liberation and freedom. Liberation being the freedom from, whether it's a ruler, colonialism, etc., freedom from someone telling me what I can do with my body. But what's more interesting, because liberalism is largely a freedom from things, for instance, what's more interesting is that anarchists also say, well, okay, if I can tell, you know, I should be able to do what I want with my body, but what would I do? That's the interesting question. It's like, okay, it's interesting that I can, you know, have the freedom not just have someone tell me I can't get an abortion, but what do I want to do to feel my sexuality, gender, sex? What do I want? How do I want my body to exist in the world? That's when the interesting question of freedom comes in. And how do I want that to relate to other people? So anarchists ask for both freedom and liberation simultaneously. So a lot of anarchists support the Palestinians' right to self-determine, which is liberation, to not be an occupied people. But the next question is, and what will they do after? And that's where it becomes interesting, I think, for anarchists. Because of course people shouldn't be in occupation. Everyone deserves freedom from. But the anarchists, hopefully, when people become liberated, the next question is, for what? For what? What is the freedom to do? And hopefully they and many other people will aspire to freedom to that. And in this freedom, in this state of freedom to do things, I think the other thing that I think I'll share is an idea of we are not seeking equal equality, which capitalism does. If, you know, if I get my, you know, X amount of dollars of food stamps, that everyone who makes the same amount of money should get the same X amount of dollars of food stamps from a government, you know. But I think in a community, again, I'm coming back to the library, I love libraries because I can go out and check out one book and someone else can check out 20 and someone else can check out a DVD or audio tapes. That's what anarchists is asking for. Not equality, that we all have to only take out one book one every week from a library, to use that example. But that we're asking for the equality of unequals. That I might be able to read 10 books a week and so I can check out 10 books. And someone else actually just wants to watch movies, but they can do that too. And that we're not the same. I don't eat the same amount of food. I don't like the same types of food as other people. So is it that we all need to get the exact same amount and make the same amount of money? Or do we say that some people, you know, want to be vegan, vegetarians, meat. Some people want to eat less. At different times in our life, we need different kinds of health care. That's where the equality of unequals is. And the fact that if I need more health care at different times in my life, that should be part of something we think society should offer people. Not a government above us, but us together figuring out ways to self-manage ways of health care that isn't about everybody having the same. So where I live in Vermont, I'm very lucky, the state of Vermont. Until there's no state of Vermont, we're trying to secede, and then maybe we'll be either a tiny country, which some people want, which is involved, or we'll be a confederated, directly democratic confederation. But once I get health care for free through the state of Vermont, which is great. But they don't cover glasses. Okay, for me, glasses are pretty much the health care I need. But they don't understand that to be something. So for me, the quality of health care is great. I get the same health care as everybody else does that makes below a certain amount. And it's great. It is great. I get to go free to see the doctor. What I need is glasses. So that's what I mean by the quality of unequals. It's like, it's fine if I get glasses, but I never go to deal, I said I don't have kids. I'm never going to use pregnancy service. I never will, never have, getting told anything for good sake. So it's like, I'll never need to use that kind of health care, and that's okay. That's okay. It's great that other people do. That's the quality of unequals. Okay. The next thing is that anarchists, I mentioned this earlier, are not trying to simply call for a society where we all get just what we need. Because how do we even know what need is? That anarchists are about us getting what we need and desire, and that we together would figure that out based on what we actually have. So if we're going through a time when food production, this has been awful winter in Vermont, there's still like this much snow someplace, it's awful. I was walking around the community garden today like an idiot looking at flowers. And it's like, if there's no possibility of growing food right now in Vermont, pretty much. So if there isn't, then if we were having a different society where we were thinking about how food worked, we would all have not a lot of food right now. But at other times, if we had a lot of food, we'd figure out how the need and desire for that would work. Who would produce it, who would eat it, how it would happen. But we'd figure out both those things together. And that would be the process question. Right now, a lot of people, it's funny being in New York where you need to walk by the Apple Store. Yesterday, I was walking all around the city, and the number of people at Apple Store buying apples, it's like people think they need whatever Apple has just produced. Apple, right? And maybe we do. And maybe we do want a society where everybody gets a really nice thin computer or et cetera. Maybe that's something we think is something people need, but we need to decide that together and not in a capitalist mode of production and ecological, if it's sustainable to build it, if we decide together that it's worthwhile. We might think that's something that people need, but not from the Apple Store or the Cube. Okay, the next thing, next few things and then I'll be done, is anarchists also emphasize, because it's not just about this need where you have your loaf of bread, you know, your health care that doesn't include glasses, blah, 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 that anarchists also are really, if there's things we desire, well, desire also includes spontaneity and play and joy and pleasure. And so anarchists, by and large, are pretty damn joyful, playful, happy, creative, imaginative people. And I would actually argue that's probably one of the this is mind-boggling to me. What can stop capitalism? It's such an interesting question. Or what can hinder it or undo it? And I keep going. If you read Murray Bookchin's work, he thought the ecological crisis was going to be the limit to capitalism. I think he's wrong, actually. And even just before he died a couple years ago, he was even at the end of his life was like, maybe I was wrong about that. That there would, capitalism would reach a point where it would destroy the earth. Maybe he's right. Who knows? We're not there yet. Global warming might prove him right. But that for me right now, it's like capitalism seems to have taken over everything, except I really hope that our minds and this idea of joy and happiness and love, I know capitalism can commodify love, but for those of us who've been in love with our friends, our lovers, etc., there is something really distinct about love that I still don't think capitalism can capture, and our imagination. So that's why I think anarchists really do also spontaneity and joy and love, and think that they aren't just simply like frivolous in a sense. They're actually carving out spaces that feel outside of a world that's opposed upon us. And we need to also learn, most anarchists don't think there's going to be some day where you jump over a barricade and the lovely, you know, Garden of Eden's on the other side, or paradise, or the good society, or that anarchists understand revolution as being a, there may be some breaks where it's really dramatic and, you know, Argentina had a financial collapse and a whole bunch of assemblies emerged for a year or two and it was seen very revolutionary and it was in a lot of ways. So there will be breaks like that. But anarchists also believe that it's like doing this as much as possible now, prefiguring it. So that's why we want to also prefigure actually doing our lives and getting up, having other people do it too. Okay. So to experience that joy and love and beauty in life, anarchists, one of the strong values of anarchism then is that we associate with each other freely and voluntarily because we want to. We don't go to, I'm a really hard worker, but I work very little amount of time for money. I luckily edit books for a living and I can do it very little amount because I don't spend a lot of money to live. And most of my life I work really hard, but for projects that have nothing to do. They have to do everything with what I care about and love. And I do that with people that I choose to do that with. So I'm not going to a workplace that I don't want to be at to associate with people I've never have any relationship to. I have nothing to talk about except, you know, sports, which I'm not interested in, etc., or whatever we talk about at work. But I'm choosing to do the hard work I want to do with other people or the play, etc. But secondarily, I do that with a sense of solidarity and responsibility toward people and figuring out ways to balance the fact that we associate voluntarily, but we also want to be accountable to each other and figure out ways so that I promise my collective in this very, all of us as a collective have promised each other, we have a bookstore, which I mentioned. We have promised each other, we loaned ourselves money to the bookstore originally, no interest loans until we paid it off. We promised each other we would stay with that project until we had paid ourselves back, because some of us loaned different amounts of money. Some of us had different amounts of money, the equality of unequals. So we promised we would continue to do that project if we paid it off together, or we would figure out a way to make sure we could all get paid off before we just get, and we're still together, we love each other. There's lots of luck with it. One of the few functional collectives I've been a part of. But we took that really seriously, and when we paid off the debt, we actually sat down and had several meetings to evaluate whether we wanted to even do the project anymore together. So we keep revisiting whether we actually want to still be together and whether we want to still do the work we're doing together. So the voluntary association has mechanisms of accountability and ways of being thinking about each other in relationship. And we have forms of mutual aid and cooperation while we're doing it. So if we voluntarily associate, it isn't that one person is doing all the work to make the project happen. But the way we help each other and offer mutual aid and offer ways of doing different tasks doesn't, again, have to be equal based on what we care about. But if nobody, one thing nobody ever likes to do at our bookstore is take the trash out. We try to redistribute. Well, actually, one thing none of us like to do is to make the phone calls to make sure the schedule is filled for volunteers. And so we actually rotate that task. And whenever it's my 2 weeks, I complain, and whenever it's someone else's 2 weeks, they complain, we get to listen to each other complain, but somebody has to do it for 2 weeks, whether we want to or not, because none of us like doing that. So, but then there's other things I do specifically that no one else does in our bookstore, but I like it, and vice versa. So, voluntary association, mutual aid, and a sense of accountability. The last few things that anarchists can share is this idea, as I was talking about earlier, is bringing these things that are seemingly incompatible with each other, a free individual and a free society, and trying to play with how they would work together. So decentralism and interdependence, direct democracy and autonomy, or localism and globalism, etc. But anarchists spend a lot of time playing with what it means to have both those things happen. For those of you that went to some of the large-scale anti-capitalist demonstrations happened here in D.C., New York, Quebec City, Prague, etc., etc., there was really, what was interesting about those, by and large, really shaped by an anarchist sensibility, is people spent a lot of time trying to figure out what it means to have unity and diversity. There's a phrase called diversity of tactics, so we'll be, you know, happy that people do different things at these demonstrations. But that's less interesting than the idea is, can we all come together to oppose the war, or to oppose capitalism, and share something in common, but each do it in completely different ways? And practice what that would look like. That's what I love best about those demonstrations. It was actually practicing this idea of what it means to be both in agreement and in disagreement in terms of what we're going to do at the same time. And yet it seems so lovely and unified. So, okay, the last three things is anarchists thus spend a huge amount of time trying to understand what would a reconstructive vision look like or a utopian outlook. What would we replace the things we don't like with? And anarchists need to do a lot more of this, and they need to do this a lot more visibly. And we do this really well with our own little institutions, but I think it really behooves us more and more to actually explain what we think would replace capitalism as an economic system. And I don't think that would be one thing. I think it would be many things. So Michael Elbert's Participatory Economics, so there's going to be a little debate about it tomorrow. I'm so excited to go to it. For those of you that know Participatory Economics. Michael Elbert is not an anarchist, and while, you know, they've done tremendous work with Participatory Economy, and I'm so glad it's out there. It's almost one of the only few things where someone's actually imagined what a different economic system would look like. So whenever anyone asks me what would replace capitalism, I actually don't like participatory economics all that much, but I really respect the fact that they have done it, because, and it's almost the only thing that's out there. So you almost have to just say, well, there's one example, and then I wish I could say, and there's 20 others, but they're, so anarchists practice those things really well, but they don't tend to, like, put the ideas out there, and it's, again, why we first go to write and ideas, theories, or stuff. But anarchists really try to understand what we replace if we don't like racism, if we don't like heteronormativity, if we don't like the state, etc. What would our visions look like? Anarchists spend a lot of time working on that. And that's really distinct. It's like actually thinking through a utopia, which is thinking through a better world right now. Thus, all anarchists, I think, share this idea that there's a relationship between the means and the ends. How we live our life now has to have some relationship to what we want the world to look like in the future. So, you know, running someone for president in hopes of somehow getting a, you know, directly democratic, non-statist, anti-capitalist society, you know, you could argue there's pragmatic reasons potentially to want to support a president right now for some people, but that is actually leading you probably in the wrong direction toward weakening the state by supporting that. So anarchists really think through, okay, what if I'm doing this? Many anarchists, for instance, have run for local office. Some folks in Australia that did this about 10 years ago, they ran for mayor and city council, a whole host of anarchists, and their platform was, if we win, we are going to abolish ourselves, the office, deconstruct the city, and actually put in place neighborhood assemblies that have complete power to decide what the city looks like. They lost. But if they had won, that would have meant that enough people in that town actually were excited about doing that. So I thought that was kind of a neat strategy. So it isn't that anarchists are always against, you know, that you can't, but that actually, using the elections, but actually exactly trying to get the means and the ends to work together. Not advocating that as 100% of the strategy every time. I just think it's interesting how sometimes the things we think anarchists would never do, it's like more like trying to figure out how it relates to the world we want to be at the end. So anarchists try to prefigure their practices again in everything they do right now, how they treat each other, how they organize their projects. And the last thing this leads, I think, to all how what all anarchists share is all anarchists share this idea of sort of a do-it-yourself, together sensibility. Not by yourself, but do it ourselves together. And that can simply mean a lot of anarchists, something called lifestyle or individualist anarchists, although I don't really like those phrases so much, but there's some people that put a lot of their energy into spending time thinking about how together we can do it ourselves in our personal lives, in our collective houses, or, you know, our very more sort of, you know, insular. There's some people doing really good work around mental health issues or things. Things seem more in the personal. They aren't really in the personal realm, obviously. But people that spend a lot of time doing work around sort of everyday life things or categories. Mental health is an extra good example for move that out. So things that where you focus on, like, say, collective life, but how your everyday life look. So you personally and your friends actually look better. Other anarchists spend a lot of time looking at next year. Better example here is mental health. Things that affect larger and larger amounts of people, but they might simply do it within sort of the anarchist milieu right now because it's too hard to transform the whole mental health industry right now. And would spend time like, how can we work out within our own communities doing conflict resolution or, you know, health practices right now and do that in ways that actually emulate forms of self-organization, which is the point I want to make. That anarchists spend a lot of time thinking, if we do not like the current social order and the current form of social organization, again, what will we see in its place? So if you think the mental health industry is a problem, then you figure out ways to do that in ways that are humane, that are individuated, that have a variety of what can happen, that are supportive, that are mutualistic, that are voluntary, etc. And you figure out a form of self-organization that would attempt to get at the issue you're concerned about. Other people would say, okay, I'm concerned about workplaces, and I want to see how we can organize workplaces to be more and more self-managed, where people can have more and more control over the things they produce, and together not have someone above them telling them what to do. Or the neighborhood. I love doing community. My thing is I'm really interested in, as I keep repeating, figuring out forms of what would play the state. For me, that's councils, neighborhood assemblies. So I love doing work where I live in Vermont, where it seems possible to come up with face-to-face forms of direct democracy with your neighbors and have these folks at community meetings. And people all of a sudden really feel empowered and they can actually make decisions about their lives. To me, that's really fun. I like living in a place like my neighborhood. But it doesn't really matter. Anarchists, if all of us do it in all different places, that's actually better. Because the point is we're trying to emulate in little pieces different forms of self-management, self-governance, self-organization that tries to carve out more and more spaces. I was talking to some preschool folks, a lot of people do it in educational realms, all sorts of places, doesn't matter. But anarchists, by and large, try to figure out how they would self-organize the world. Even anarchists that say they're not for organization. There's a whole tendency of anarchists that say they're against organization. But they have info shops, and they put out zines, and they often do that in collective, directly democratic forms of organizing, even if it's the five people that are doing it. So I really actually don't think there's almost any real sort of truly anti-organizational anarchists, because ever might just be the scale is very, very small. Okay. So I'll just end on again. I think anarchism, if nothing else, provides this idea of a set of ethical orientations or a compass or a sensibility to help you think through almost every decision in your life, not just for yourself, but for the world that you can see around you and the whole of the world, which is why I'm not an anti-civilizationist anarchist. I met someone a few weeks ago who said she thought you could only care about 150 people. She's an anti-civilizationist anarchist. And she thought you could only care about 150 people in the world. She read something that said the capacity of the human mind was only 150 people to really care about, which may be true. I don't know. To really, really care about. But that does not imply to me that there aren't 150 other people on the other side of the world and here and there and everywhere, but also, and I feel everybody deserves to self-manage and self-organize. And so the project for me is, if I'll never, ever go to China, I can still care about the fact that people in China deserve the right to self-organize and self-manage and not have a state and et cetera, et cetera. And that, in a sense, it provides an ethical compass to see how you feel about everything that happens around the world, even if you're never going to intervene in what's happening in China right now, or the Iraq War, or et cetera. I'm never going to go to, Baghdad, I'm never going to be part of figuring out what a Palestinian state looks like or a non-state looks like. There's actually some radicals are thinking about what non-state forms of self-determination look like in other parts of the world, and I'm not part of that, but I can still care about that, because anarchism, in a sense, gives you this compass. So in a sense, I think what's really interesting about anarchism, it asks us to say, what is it that we don't like in the present? What possibilities do we see in the present that point toward a different world? I think there are many that do. The internet was an example. It's so easy to pick up. I used a computer earlier. But forms of social organization that a lot of technology might allow us to do, but maybe we don't like the way it structures right now. How can we take the possibility of certain things, global interconnection, and understand how we could bring that into a different world that's decentralized, non-hierarchical, asking for freedom with an ethical compass? Anarchists do nothing else but provide these micro-experiments in ways of living lives that feel fully self-individuated in fully self-individuated communities, even if they're small, and come up with all sorts of crazy innovative ways to provide food, healthcare, housing, arts, etc. Even if that's all we do, that's crucial for anarchism to exist, I think. And why, much as there's things I don't like in anarchism, I always come back to it, because I think almost nobody else does that anymore. We might have ethical notions coming through the Christian far right, etc. But I think those ethics are only saying for these people gets to be part of that world. The Christian far right has an ethic, but it's only if you fit into these categories who gets to fit into that ethic. And anarchists saying, I don't know what's right for the whole world, but I know everybody should be able to figure that out for themselves together. And that there's some way we can still have a cohesiveness. I'm
completely believe that's the project of what Anarchism is trying to do. And so therefore, I'm happy to be open to a world that's going to allow everybody to fit into it. Even, ultimately, I hope, the people who now understand themselves as police or military, etc. Every great revolution has pretty much succeeded when the people with the guns and spikes join the ragtag people who aren't a professional army. So I have to believe, even if I walk outside and feel the cops in New York and they make me mad, I have to believe that they too can someday decide that that's not a world they want to live in. I think it's an anarchism. And that the possibility anarchism holds that out for people. So in a sense, we are an example and a guidepost and a hope for ourselves and for the rest of the world. And that's really powerful, I think, in this moment. And I'll end on this note. I've been totally fixated by the Obama campaign. Can't get enough of listening to it because he keeps stealing all the damn ideas of hope and change and, you know, bottling up and saying and it's going to change because we vote. And most of us are anarchists know. I really could care less whether people go in a voting booth and vote for president or not. It's so on. It's so easy to say it all the time. But I don't... Anarchists will know that one person just telling us, if you vote for me, the world will be different. But damn it, he has this lovely slogan that the world as it is not the world it has to be. And that's an anarchist slogan. I want us to say, okay, it isn't just a slogan, it's a way of living our lives in social struggle and resistance and social movements and projects. It's a lived idea. It's not simply a campaign slogan. So I really, at this time in the world when so many people actually are responding to the idea they want change and hope, I think actually anarchism is more place than ever to say, yes, 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 we can, but not through a state, not through capitalism, not through getting one person to help us do that. Yes, we can, because we actually can. We actually can slow for it. And that's really different. It's not a slogan, it's a practical, a lived way of looking at the world. So, anyway, so I'll end there. Like I said, we only have 20 minutes left. There's actually other people who are anarchists in the room who want to disagree or throw out other ideas. Really, it's so hard to do these by yourself because, you know, everyone has their own, that's a far-reaching take on things I've left out or you disagree with. Or if there's someone who isn't, who just wants to raise their hand and talk about them.
I would like to say something. Maybe
stand up because I think the acoustics are actually really bad.
Or don't.
Pardon me.
I was just thinking because you bring Obama in the final. And I think what you said about anarchists, about the unions, how the unions is very important to organize the people. And like you said about anarchists like look like very bourgeoisie, you know, very poetry, very beautiful. And I don't think so the anarchists like that. I think anarchists all the time they try to educate people how the system operates, how the state operates, how we can, like Obama called change, how we can deliver the change through the system. So, when you see Obama say about change, you have to understand that he's not, you know, he's just joking.
Yeah.
You know, how you can change, if everything happens, is under this structure. So, to you change, you have to destroy the structure. Or destroy the structure, or you have to build another structure to destroy the structure by itself. So, when I see anarchists that talk about election, about Obama, this makes me mad, you know, because how can you do that? So you just negate the anarchism idea. You negate the anarchist philosophy because we anarchists, we start the structure, the capitalist structure, the state structure. This is our enemy. Why they are enemy? Because this structure, they destroy the old class. They destroy the humanity. Because everything we are the reproduction of the system. So, if you suffer, if you work like suffer, it's because of the system, like this structure. So, the structure is our enemy. So, how we can believe if something can change with this structure? And this, I bought this magazine today because it's beautiful. If the system say to us, they are slow down. How about us? We are supporting Obama.
I'm not actually supporting Obama. I'm just saying, I think the idea that we create that
movement. I would like to more about the youth.
We have so little time. Actually, just going to let different people speak, and then we have to wrap up. Okay?
Do you think there's something about the unions? Because I think this is the.
Yeah. I'm probably not the best person to speak about unions, so maybe we could talk, but let's just let other, I just feel like there's so many, it'd be great to have a few other people speak. We only have like 15 minutes.
I'm just interested in the difference between anarcho-syndicalism and anarcho-communism. Anyone? I've got no idea. What's the difference?
Does anyone want a short description of anarcho-syndicalism versus anarcho-communism? It gets to the, I'll wrap this up really quickly with the union. Anarcho-syndicalists tend to, I think, the idea of organizing through the workplace through often union structures that are not hierarchical, that are deep, like self-managed, decentralized unions where, like the Wobblies, there's a Wobbly table upstairs, IWW, one big union where there aren't bosses even in the union, the idea. So the union itself was also directly democratic. Anarcho-syndicalists tend to focus on if we want to self-manage the workplace. And some of them are interested in unions, some not, but it's definitely through the workplace. Anarcho-communists are less interested in the workplace as just the one site. So the tradition is more like, it's more like you want to, I would suggest reading some Kropotkin's and Bookchin's work. They're sort of looking more like, how do you actually have both, except they're very confusing because then there's some anarcho-communists that simply want to focus on the workplace. There's the Northeast Federation of Anarcho-Communists that actually just focus on the workplace. But by and large, that tradition is actually asking, how would we transform the whole of society to be more communistic in the sense of we produce the world together, and anarchistic in the sense of through set forms of self-organization, but it isn't just the workplace. So that tradition actually expands it past just the workplace.
I was just going to try.
Go.
And I was just going to just, if my understanding, if it's correct, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the two are so similar in many ways, but anarcho-communists traditionally criticized anarcho-syndicalism.
Yeah.
Because they saw the danger of the authoritarianism of a bureaucratic economic unit structure, even if they're local and based on forces, based on, grand syndicates. Whereas communists were more concerned that that it could involve that kind of union organizing, but they wanted much more diversity, is my understanding.
Yeah.
Whereas syndicalists saw having a strong economic system through the union, through the industrial workforce, as being the most pragmatic way to a truly decentralized society. So that was my understanding of the conflict between the two. Close, but difference in...
Yeah. And a lot of anarcho-communists think, for instance, you should also have, some of our lives in the workplace, but some of it's also in our neighborhoods, or in, so Bookchin's work, he focuses on we need to have neighborhood assemblies, which are about people as just people who live in spaces, that not all decisions are made in the workplace. So it's really an emphasis more in a way, or strategic emphasis than, but it does play itself out because anarcho-syndicalists definitely think if you self-manage the workplace, that would be the whole of society. And I would actually argue a lot of some workers are actually, there's the whole tradition of anarchism that actually argues the point is for us not to be workers, it's to create the world in a way that's about producing things that we wouldn't understand ourselves as someone who had to go to a specific place and just do something for the rest of our lives, and that would be the whole of our lives. So, a few other people have spoken to that.
I just want to give a little antagonistic soundbite about how I've noticed, in this town, there's a lot of anarchists who work without having a big circle of what to do. We're getting some really awesome work done, and there's sort of a descending ratio of effort and results, the bigger the A gets. And not that the big A people don't get anything done, but I've definitely noticed that the more people get together in rooms to talk about their own personal A, the less they're getting done, down to the point of getting almost nothing done for a great deal of effort and a lot of people. So I'm interested in non-dogmatic, participatory organizing that has all the principles. Sort of an analogy would be I've been picked up detecting by a lot of Jesus freaks. Well, that's not my own personal relationship with Jesus, but I hate the church. Anarchism is not a church, it's your personal relationship. You can be explicit about it and be hey, I think that I'll be anarchist someday. But meanwhile, making other people outside of your dogma before you work with them has been a sort of a problem in this town and other towns I've been to. Atlanta, the anarchist
breakouts
are so laughable.
Anyway, that's a big debate with anarchists is how much you spend worried about your own life versus other things, and how do you integrate with the other people who aren't anarchists. So if you want to get into the exciting debate with anarchism, that's one. Those are some big debates. Another tendency which got raised there was there's anarcho-Catholics, anarcho-Jews, anarcho-Muslims, etc., where people understand their relationship to spirituality is not about just taking what a book or a preacher or a rabbi or etc. has to tell you, just doing it unthinkingly, but you have a direct relationship with your spirituality, and that the texts are about interpretation and trying to come up with an ethic through it. Not one of the tendencies I'm, gravitate toward, but it's completely long-term legitimate tendency within anarchism. It's lovely actually to see anarcho-Muslims as a really recent thing as far as I know. So
a lot of people trying to have a direct relationship with their spirituality, non-mediated by our own
I think you're kind of more careful. Well, yeah, I'm not very knowledgeable in why I didn't sort of start to learn about anarchism, but to me, I think I have a question that's somewhat critical of that, since I don't really have a framework experience for your business, since that's kind of the
beginning. Yes. Historically, anarchism, like I said, came through socialism, and the big question is how do we actually transform, how do we achieve a good society, how do we transform society? But Zerzan's an interesting figure. He and Murray Bookchin, again, we encourage you to read both their works. They both actually came through something called Western Marxism, which is Marxists that are very close to anarchists. They're actually much more like interested in councils, very small tendency within Marxism that gets lost, which is too bad. It's something called the Situationists you should look into. They're lovely. Crime Think borrows from them heavily. Basically, read the Situationists. They're much better than Crime Think. The Situationists are incredible, but they're Marxists. And they're Marxists, which is a problem in a way because when you read their work, some of it's incredible. But Zerzan and Bookchin both came through this Marxist, Western Marxist tradition that was really concerned with, concerned about the question of alienation or estrangement from the world. That's coming out of Marx. So how do we, why is it that we read the world and we feel alienated or estranged from it? And Bookchin says, he's an anarcho-communist, he said, okay, if we feel estranged from the world we made, then we as humans need to figure out both the natural, the non-human and the human world. We need to figure out better and better ways to reharmonize ourselves with the natural world and figure out better ways to self-manage society if we want to unalienate ourselves from the world, be unestranged from the things we produce. Zerzan said, the alienation and the estrangement happens so far back, we need to go back before that. And for him, that's before we can think symbolically, before we can do agriculture, time, pretty much any category. So he wants to go back to way, way, way far ago, to the point at which we're more really in tune with the animalistic side of what, which I would say actually removes anything that would be recognizable as what makes us human. An interesting position in the sense that I think they're both right. We live in a world we feel so foreign and alien to us. And they're both concerned about ecological issues, about how do we reintegrate ourselves in the world. They just go in different directions. The reason I would be concerned about a Zerzan position is I think it's beautiful that we have the capacity to imagine a better world. I don't want to not be able to, I don't want to rid the world of imagination. At least plenty of other animals have forms of imagination, but humans do have a very specific, expansive one. Zerzan wants art, et cetera, et cetera. Those things are a problem. I don't think art is a problem per se. Maybe the fine art galleries where they sell you tiny little paintings for $30,000 are a problem. Is the art we make ourselves in self-managed in different kind of ways a problem? And Zerzan doesn't spend a lot of time differentiating that. So in a sense, he's saying we need to abandon everything that makes us human in order to get back to a world in which we're not alienated. And Bookchin says we actually have to make ourselves more human, actually use our imagination to imagine a better world and implement that. Again, both legitimate, responding to a completely legitimate injury of concern. I think the logic of a primitivist position, why I would be against it in anarchism, is I don't want to be part of a project, number one, that gets rid of all of us. And the logic of it is, often it's then the earth is, there's too many people, the carrying capacity is a problem, et cetera, et cetera. We only could have, you know, the number of people who live in the city of Chicago. It's one talk I heard by someone who's a socialist. And how you would get to that is a little problematic and scary, I think, because they never really have a very good answer for it, but very, 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 very few people take that extreme position. Many people simply say, I wish we could go back to before agriculture and live in smaller scale hunting, gathering society, or I wish we could go back to tiny, small towns. Many of you live in New York City. I personally think you could probably make New York City self-managed, directly democratic, ecological, et cetera, et cetera. Perhaps if we want to at least try that project, if people live in big cities and want to try that, I think it's an interesting experiment. Not everyone might live in a small town. So even on the level of even a kind of nicer, softer anti-civilization, often advocates everybody needs to live in towns of 200 or 300 or 1,000. And a lot of people don't want to do that. And if we can figure out ways to do that in an ethical, anarchistic way, I look around New York and it's hard to imagine. But on the other hand, you know, there's plenty of reasons. People grow a lot of food in New York City, for instance. And, you know, food could look really different in New York City, just to name one thing. That's sort of the tendency. But I really want to say with anarchism is, and rather than, there is this tendency with myself and other people and anarchists to kind of, okay, but, you know, I can be really flippant about the primitivist position, the civilization position. But what I think is really interesting is to ask, what's the kernel? What is upsetting people? And every single person I met who's under
understands himself as a primitivist or anti-civilization, is deeply, deeply concerned with ecological issues. Deeply feels upset about the world and damaged by the world. Deeply feels not seen in this world. And that's why they want to be an anarchist. And that's right. I think that's right. So then the point is for us to just argue out, so what will we make to make the world ecological? You know, to then have those discussions and hash that out. But I think the impulses, I don't mean to be flippant about these things, because I think most of our impulses are actually correct. And maybe it isn't. Things we want to then argue out. Someone who hasn't spoken, we only have time for a few more.
This is just a quick side point made back earlier in your introduction. You mentioned central issue about how communism ended there in those countries, and you framed it like capitalism prevailed over communism. And I am from Hungary, Budapest, and I just wanted to add shortly my post-communist perspective that communism in all forms it existed in very different cultures around the world,
yeah,
really suppressed individual freedom and made people unhappy. So don't fool yourself, any of you. It's not just that the great theory did not work out so well where they tried it so far. It is just unavoidable to provide a road towards a sort of collectivism that logically and necessarily suppress individual freedom. So I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned is that it's really necessary to draw a line between those ideas and organizations that are going to suppress individual freedom and see that those are not at all better than social capitalism. Actually, they are worse. And what prevailed in the post-communist countries were democracy and human rights, not in a perfect way. We are struggling with it, but it's far, far, far better than we had under the communist ideology, not to mention the fascist ideology and the Nazi influence during the Second World War and the road that led to the Algerian Holocaust and things like that. But really, you need to see it realistically. I heard it in the US many times from people that, oh, I still believe that communism is the way and things like that. And anarchism is different, but still. So framing things like capitalism prevailing, etc., is really just a misunderstanding of the situation.
I wasn't saying that actually, I mean, it's so hard to think, like, the thumbnail. I was just trying to, it was a very, to say, you're right, collectivization is awful, and it's just looking at, just sort of making the free, unfettered individual is awful, in different ways. I don't even know, one might be better or worse, but they do completely different things. And so, well, I guess I was trying to point out that the point is actually to do neither, and I wasn't advocating, I wasn't saying that capitalism had won everywhere, and that was really the same, simply it suddenly was being advanced that, well, there's really nothing else now, because this is the choice, you know. And I think the reason people are actually reconsidering anarchism is like, okay, there has to be, if communism is this inherently, which I would agree the practice, and capitalism is this, well, what other things are out there? And I actually think so many people around the world right now, there's this whole, you know, horizontalist time period where all sorts of people are saying, let's think about ways that are structured to organize horizontally, and that leads to a whole bunch of movements, you know, from workers, you know, from peasants, workers, etc. Many of whom are not anarchists all around the world, but I think it's because people realize neither is actually going to bring about freedom, and they both have been so discredited. It was only that capitalism, the understanding is now, look, it's, you know, we want, even if that's not true everywhere. I'm not everywhere is obviously, you know. There's one more person, if not, it's also 2:15.
Is that what you say?
What? Yeah, I should probably stop at 2:15.
No, just,
do you want to leave real quick?
No, because I said so many things. I think what I spoke is because I believe that anarchism is very wide. You can be individual anarchists, don't do nothing, you know, be anarchists. But the point is when you talk of change, when you see the election, you know, if you see some anarchists about Obama, I think it's very important to understand who supports the structure, the work class. So to work with the work class only through unions. The union is very important in the history of anarchism. So you must bring to the table the union, you know? we become very poor.
I guess I would spend on, I think what's lovely about anarchism is that some people think unions are the answer, other people think neighborhoods, and other people think, and that's actually the beauty of evolution, is that people actually want to counter these structures, whether it's, you know, communism, capitalism, these structures that keep us feeling not free. So I should actually end because there's someone else who's using this room. And thanks everybody for being here.